webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment that you saw yourself in God and God in you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution. And now, here's Glenn Klein online.
Greetings, you beautiful humans. This is Glenn Klein online. It's hump day, Wednesday, June 1st, 2011. The only first day of June 2011 in the history of humanity. And also, the only first webcast of the start of summer pledge drive 2011 in the history of the Gospel Revolution. Welcome in on this Gospel Revolution Wednesday. Glad to have you along for the ride. Coming to you live from the studio in the Tampa Bay region, the Bay of the Holy Spirit, the original name of Tampa Bay, if you will. Glad to have you, as I said, and wanting to take your calls and your pledges tonight. Sean is ready to take your calls in studio at 1-800-436-3260. All over the United States and Canada, 1-800-436-3260. Get us off to a fast and furious start, por favor. If you're listening outside the U.S. and it is 9 o'clock on the east coast of the U.S. of A., that is your clue to give us a call at 813-425-5773. Everywhere else besides U.S. and Canada, 813-425-5773. We have much to discuss, much to get through tonight, and we want to hear your heart, your voice, your contribution to this effort. So without any further ado, let us go to the home offices of the Gospel Revolution, one of the home offices, if you will. Across the Gulf of Mexico we go to Houston, Texas, where the most holy reverend, the Grand Poobah, is waiting to greet you. Mr. Michael Williams. Michael!
Hey, Glenn. Good evening.
How are you?
I'm doing really well. It's still dry in Houston. It's been crazy. It's been 3 months and we hadn't had any rain. There's the weather report. We always get a weather report in some.
Well, you liked it. I think in a past life, Michael, you were a weatherman. Maybe a weather woman, if you will. It's the third time.
It doesn't make any difference to me.
It's the third time that I've used, if you will, in the first 2 minutes of the webcast. That is not good. We are glad and good to have an opportunity to bring the good news to you, ladies and gentlemen. As I said, there is a lot to talk about. We've got a video clip off of YouTube that we're going to be sharing that is so germane to the fact that we are starting our start of summer pledge drive and about the opulent lifestyles of so many well-known, I use this term very loosely, ministers that Inside Edition did recently. Linda Wilby sent it to us of Tom and Linda Wilby fame. And ironically and coincidentally, that meeting that Linda and Tom hosted Michael in Fredericton,
New Brunswick,
thank you, in Canada, is our thank you gift for this pledge drive. The thank you gift for gifts of $100 or more, whether it be in one time or monthly giving, totaling $100, is the single CD from The Imputation of God that Michael did recently in Fredericton. And for gifts of $200 or more, you'll receive the entire series. And it is an absolutely mind-blowing and revolutionizing message that you'll want to get. And so here's all you got to do, folks. You just go online, click on donations, do your best. And literally, we're talking about if you want to do it at the $100 level to get the CD as a thank you, it's $10 a month. That's what we're asking. If everybody would do $10 a month, we'd be sitting pretty. But we know that about only 10% of the people that listen and that benefit from this message have given. We're asking that number to go up tonight and for the next 21 days. Our goal is to raise, I know this sounds ridiculous, but $600 in additional monthly giving. One-time gifts are greatly appreciated as well. You just go to gospelrevolution.com, click on donations, fill out the information, and then email us at webcast@gospelrevolution.com and let us know what you did with your shipping address so that we can send you your thank you gifts. And, you know, Michael, the need is great right now.
Yes, for sure. We're at another one of those points where that, you know, we have enough monthly support coming in to where that it along with a pledge drive, it really does help take care of the bills and to pay for the necessities of operating Gospel Revolution and Mike Williams Ministries. And then over the next 2 months, that begins to kind of fade away until the next pledge drive. I'd really like to get us past the point where we're living from, if you will, from pledge drive to pledge drive. And at least it's not from hand to mouth, but we were at hand to mouth, and now we're from pledge drive to pledge drive. So if we had the increase, that increase on a monthly basis, it would make a really, really major difference for us as far as handling the monthly expenses of the Gospel Revolution and Mike Williams Ministries. So it would be greatly appreciated. And as you know, we guarantee you that God will do nothing for you.
You know, that literally is an ironclad guarantee.
It is ironclad. God will do nothing for you at all. But your heart will do something for you. Your heart will be very glad that you are invested in the lives of other people and that other people are hearing the gospel in a way they've never heard the gospel before. And, you know, we've gotten so many reports from all around the world of lives in, 160 countries in the world who are receiving and hearing the gospel. And it really is, I really don't hesitate to use the term transforming. It is transforming people's lives in an amazing way. Because when you are able to step out of a guilt-ridden life and a life of judgment, it is transforming. It is nothing short of transforming. And the long-term process is not only is it individually transforming, but I have that I just have that thing in me that says that this could be transforming for this planet that we live on. If you were to eradicate judgment, if you were to eradicate guilt, first off, if you were to eradicate guilt out of the hearts and minds of everyone on this planet, the impact would be, there is no way to measure the impact.
It's unfathomable, the impact.
It really is. There is no amount, just if we eradicated guilt out of people's hearts, the amount of aggression, the amount of self-destruction that guilt causes in someone's heart, the amount of stress that brings on diseases that, you know, it just goes on and on. But the gospel, there's two things that Paul literally guaranteed us that the gospel, as we hear the gospel, that it will do. Now, the gospel, remember, the gospel will not redeem you. The gospel is news about the fact you've been redeemed. Nothing I tell you can redeem you. Nothing I can do can get you into heaven. You already got that. Know it, don't know it, believe it, don't believe it. Those things are done. Those spiritual things are done already by God himself through Christ. So these are settled issues. But the two things that Paul, especially in the book of Romans, seem to emphasize, that the gospel will do this. The gospel will do this. The go- gospel will do this. It will eradicate guilt and judgment out of the heart. Now, know of a way to help the world any better than that.
Let me ask you a question, Michael.
Sure.
Now, obviously, we know that people still do things that are not proper or that are go astray from even their own moral standards. And yet, you talk about often that you haven't experienced guilt in decades. How can a person live their lives and be human and recognize even that they're human and not experience guilt in that process?
Well, you know, here's the thing. I just spoke to a lady who was here at my house on some business just 3 days ago. And while she was here, she said, oh, by the way, what do you do for a living? What do you do for work? And I said, well, I always hesitate because I know it's going to take a little bit of explaining. And I said, well, I've been in the ministry for 39 years. And then I went from there to telling her that, but I've kind of been rejected by Christianity because I have rejected Christianity. She said, what do you mean? And I said, well, I started teaching that tithing is not for the new covenant. I said, that pretty well got me kicked out of all churches. She said, oh yeah, they like their money. And I thought, well, I got one here. You know, she's seeing this side of the story already. And I said, then I started teaching that everybody had been redeemed and nobody's going to hell. Everybody was going to heaven. And her comment to me and her response shows the inadequacy that Christianity creates in the heart and the lack of knowing your own heart. She said, then why would anybody do good? If it had been back when I was in Christianity, I would have certainly understood the question. But, you know, we've been so absorbed in the gospel for so many years now, that question was just shattering to me that someone, absent the threat of hell, would have no reason to do good. It just blew me away. And I know that that is the standard mentality that is out there. Without the threat of guilt and judgment and hell itself, people actually have no confidence in themselves that they would do something even good, even for themselves, much less somebody else, outside the threat of hell behind them. What kind of life is that? But it has been a guilt-free life for me for about, I think, about 15 years now, actually. And it has, and how does that work? Oh, my gosh.
First of all,
everything that I do.
What I was going to say, Michael, it works real good. That's number one.
Yeah, it works real good.
And number two, I can't say it's been 15 years for me, but I'd say a solid 10 or 12 years for me. And so if Glenn Klein and Mike Williams can experience life as very flawed human beings, then flawed not in the sense of how God views us, but in the sense of from a practical day-to-day experiential basis.
Contradictions.
Pay attention right now, folks, is what I'm saying, because this is for you too. All right, so how would you explain that, Michael?
Well, the life freed from guilt is a life of following your heart. You actually get to find out about yourself. It's just like with that lady. My heart broke for her because she doesn't even know her own heart. She doesn't know what she would do and would not do. Until you're free from a threat of punishment, of hell, you don't even know who you are. The very first step that a human being must make to find out who they are is to not have an eternal threat hanging over their head. Now, all of us have the threat of the police getting involved,
right,
somebody rejecting us, all of those things. But I'm telling you, the threat of eternal punishment is mind-altering to the point to where that you do not know who you are.
Now,
you don't know who you are.
And it's not just eternal. it starts out that way. When you realize that you will not be punished in any way, shape, or form for being
right,
a human
being. God isn't going to punish you.
Right, for being a human being in eternity. In other words, there's no hell at the end for somebody who steps outside of the so-called narrow way. That's the start of it. But when you also realize that God is not going to punish you, or the universe is not going to punish you because you have followed your heart and you've made a, quote, mistake, unquote, that's where you come into a place of peace and a guilt-free existence.
You know, some time ago, Glenn, I think it was about 2, maybe 3 years ago, I was actually in a meeting and we were in the question and answer time, and people were talking about, well, we all make mistakes. And I said, I don't. And of course I got everybody's attention. I said, I don't make mistakes. I said, you know, once my heart became free, everything I do deliberately, whether you agree with it or not, or even if I have done something that I need to go back and say I'm sorry for.
Right, even if you don't agree with it.
Even if I don't agree with it, I did it deliberately.
Yeah.
Do you know how healthy it is to be able to take responsibility for everything you say and do? And I admit that when I do things, I do it deliberately. Well, I made a mistake. Well, I'm sorry. I don't live in the mistake category anymore. And if I do something, and if I say something harsh or bitter or angry, I did it deliberately. Now, it reveals to me where I'm at, and it reveals to the person that I've been bitter or angry with where I'm at, but I don't go say, oops, I made a mistake. That's demeaning. You need to own your own stuff. We've heard that from several categories of New Age and everything else. But it is so healthy just to be able to know that what you do now is you did it because you decided to. It's not because, oops, I made a mistake. Oops, I did it again. Oops, I did it again. Oops, I did it again. Because those are excuses. We need to stop offering lame excuses for our actions and take responsibility for them. But you can only take responsibility for your actions when you are freed from eternal consequences for your actions or any type of spiritual consequences for your actions. You see, people in Christianity make mistakes because they can't admit that that's where their heart is. But I quit the whole, I made a mistake thing. I admit, wow, you know, I did that, and I remember deciding to do that. I remember I decided to say something harsh. I remember I decided to do that, and I am really sorry. And, you know, when you own something like that, when your apology comes, it means something then. But to excuse yourself with this mistaken, stumbling, bumbling, I really didn't mean to do that, every time I said I didn't mean to do that, I meant to do it. I just don't want to admit that I meant to do it. But it's so helpful just to own your stuff and to say, you know, really, I'm really sorry and I apologize if you go there. But you should be able to live life deliberately. I started living my life deliberately many years ago. I do what I want to do, and I don't do what I don't want to do. I'm not stuck where Paul was. Please hear me. I am not stuck where Paul was when he was talking about his life under the law. I don't find the power to do what I want to do, and I don't find the ability to stop doing what I don't want to do.
Right.
I don't live there.
And when you get right down to it, folks, when you think about it a little bit deeper, nobody does what they don't want to do. You've got to want, or as Michael says, you have to do it deliberately in order to do it, even subconsciously. And when you come to a place of where you are at peace because the Prince of Peace resides in your heart, the Gospel of Peace resides in your heart, and you know that your contradictions are at peace with themselves, you can own it. You can say, you know what? Think about that word, mistake. A mistake. No, It wasn't a mistake. You took exactly what you wanted to, or didn't take exactly what you wanted to. And there's a place, talk for a few minutes, Michael, about the difference between the Old Testament concept, the legalistic concept of being a child of God and being in the image of God, and now that in the Messiah we have become sons of God, and the maturity process and the taking the responsibility of knowing what freedom we actually do walk in.
Well, freedom is only for a son. And for people who think they're children of God, see, that's one of the things we have to address, is this issue of being the children of God. We are not the children of God. We are the sons of God. Sons of God is implying the degree of spiritual maturity that you have. Now, see, we don't have to mature spiritually. We mature mentally and emotionally. It is so wonderful to know that the gospel is for the mental and the emotional realm, and that it's not for our spiritual condition. Our spiritual condition is full sonship. We are not trying to grow up. I remember it used to just irritate the daylights out of me when Kenneth Hagin would come on and start teaching, "Now when you're born again," and he did talk like that, "when you're born again, your spirit's a little bitty baby, and you got to grow it up. You got to feed it. You got to grow your spirit up." Well, that's a bunch of hogwash. I remember I got kicked out of a Word of Faith church in Lakeland, Florida. I was speaking in Lakeland, Florida. I can't remember the pastor's name now, but I'm sure he still has a church there. It's a very large church. Kenneth Hagin was one of their regular speakers. And he called me into the office after Sunday morning and raked me over the coals because I had the audacity to disagree with Kenneth Hagin. His defense of Kenneth Hagin was not that Kenneth was right scripturally. He said Kenneth had been preaching for 50 years, and who was I, a young whippersnapper, he used those terms. Who was I, a young whippersnapper? I wish I was a young whippersnapper.
Well, some people have called you a young whippersnapper. Some people
well,
call
let's
you.
Leave the rest of let's leave the rest of them out.
All right. Well, what I was is it was probably the Carpenter's Home Church in Lakewood, Carl Strader.
Does that it sound was.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly right. That's where Rodney Howard Brown got his big break. Was that huge so-called revival that they had in Lakewood? I mean, in Lakeland. Yeah. That's a huge auditorium there.
Well, this was many years ago. I don't know what I think it would seat about, you know, a couple of thousand or something back then. I just don't remember. I just remember it being a large church. But he called me into the office, and because I was teaching that I wasn't teaching that everyone was born again, but I was teaching that when the Spirit is born, reborn, that it is born into full maturity, that it's not a process of growth. And I took everybody through the whole thing. Paul said that when we were children, we were kept under the law in bondage until faith came. You see, if you're a child of God, you're in bondage. A child of God is in bondage, and you are not in bondage. To say you're a child of God, oh, well, we're all children of God. Well, then you're in bondage. What are you in bondage to? You're in bondage to the law. As Paul said, you're in bondage to tutors and governors until you become a son. But you're not under governors and tutors. You're not under the law. You're not under the priest. You're not under any of these things until you become a son. You are in full sonship. In fact, Paul also made the statement, now a child, as long as he is a child, please hear this very clearly, a child, as long as he is a child, differeth nothing from a slave. Doesn't differ anything from a slave. But a son is a full heir. So I disagreed with the doctrine of the Word of Faith movement and got kicked out of Word of Faith churches because of it. But we are in full sonship. And not only we, but of course we go to the issue is that you have to be born again into sonship, And as you pointed out to me many years ago, I knew everybody had been born again through the cross. But the fact of it was, is, when Nicodemus was asking the question, Jesus answered and said, a man must be born again. And a man was.
Yes.
And when that man was born again, the entire human race was the children of God, Jews and Gentiles. Both were brought into the bosom of Christ on the cross before he ever died, and he was taken to the grave. So when he died, all died. When he was born from the dead, he was raised from the dead. The entire planet was born again. There is no instruction in the Bible on how to be born again. It's crazy. Can you understand? There is not one single line in the Bible about how to be born again, yet Christianity teaches us how to do it. And Jesus said that being born again is like the wind. When it hits you, you don't know where it came from, and you don't know where it's going once it leaves you. So for us to even teach a methodology to be being born again is absolutely absurd. But you have been born again, and you have been born again into sonship. We are all children of God. Even under the law, they were kept under tutors and governors until faith came. Until who's our faith? It's not our faith that that the world was waiting on. We were waiting on the faith of the Son of God, just like Paul was, that Paul said that he was redeemed by the faith of the Son of God who loved him and gave himself for me. So you see, we really ought to be conducting ourselves as sons. We've got to take this whole picture as sonship. You see, you can't go around depending on daddy all the time once you're a son. I think we're in the uh-oh area now. you can't go around depending on daddy all the time. And also, you have to take responsibility for your actions. But what we don't understand is that's a powerful place to come from. It's a powerful place when you become a son, the father no longer chastens and scourges you.
Why can I relate to that?
You want to. It's not that you don't see them do the things they did that you once spanked them for. But once they are sons, once they have come to full maturity, and that is a certain age group, you're not spanking your sons that are 22 years old?
No,
years old?
I have four sons, as many of you folks know. And Joe is 25, and Jake's 24, Judah is 23, and Isaac is 17. The older boys, the ones in their 20s, they're not children anymore. They're my sons. And I always knew that they were my sons, but there's no chastening anymore. There's no correction. There is a level of respect. There's a level of friendship like you would share with any friend, any insight. Yeah. There's no more chastening. There's no more correction, Michael. It is such a wonderful thing to have experience and develop. And for those of you guys who, or for those of you women out there, you're part of this sons of God.
Absolutely.
There is no male or female. There's only male. There's no Jew or Greek. There's only Greek. I mean, there's only Jew.
There's only Greek.
Yeah, there's no bond or free. There's only free. We have all been made one in God through Christ.
And Glenn, here is the other side of that coin that we've been speaking about. You don't go around providing for your sons every day. They're out providing for themselves.
No, I provide emotional support.
Absolutely.
That's it. I mean, if they need to borrow $10, you know, we can talk about it. And they've been generous with me too, believe me. But when you come to a mature relationship as a parent, a true mature relationship, not because you're older and they're older, but a true mature relationship, you are peers. You are on par with them. You are equal with them.
Yes. Absolutely.
And you receive from them. And you do not speak to them as a parent anymore. You speak to them as a equal.
Yeah.
Do you guys realize we are equal with God? Because God chose to make it that way?
Yes.
What a powerful, you talk about freedom. We've got some good news to share with you folks. We go at least 30 minutes extra during the pledge drives. We are in the first webcast of the start of summer pledge drive 2011. We've just got a one-time donation in from our dear brother Bob Hines in McDonough, Georgia for $35, which we really appreciate, Bob. We have a nice list of monthly, either new time monthly pledge or new monthly pledges or increased monthly pledges, and we are going to share those with you when we return on the other side, as we are just a third of the way through. The phone lines are wide open at 1-800-436-3260, 1-800-436-3260. We want to take our first caller tonight. Sean is waiting to take your call, so if you're listening outside the U.S., your number to call is 813-425-5773. 813-425-5773. When we return on webcast number one for the pledge drive, known as the start of summer 2011 on the Gospel Revolution Radio Network.
Folks, the world was not, quote, going to hell because of what the world did. The world was going to hell because of what somebody else did. The preaching of the gospel makes no one righteous. It reveals the righteousness that you already have. The reason the blood of Christ only covers transgressions under the First Testament is because that's the only place where transgression existed. Everyone has been made righteous. But you've got righteousness you didn't ask for, righteousness you didn't even believe for. You might say, well, I'm an atheist. Well, welcome. You're an atheist that's on your way to heaven. This is clear, sound doctrine in every Bible school that is on the face of this planet that teaches any form of Christianity.
The statements you just heard are from the Northern Midwest Conference in the teaching series, Spiritual Understanding, The Knowledge of God. James Pep Washburn writes, tonight was probably the most powerful presentation of the real gospel that I have ever heard. This is no exaggeration. The guy was absolutely firing on all cylinders tonight. He was in afterburner mode. No loose ends. Amazing. This 3-CD series is available for $24 plus shipping and handling, or in a downloadable audiobook for $12. Order your copy of the CDs or download at GospelRevolution.com today.
Welcome back in on the Gospel Revolution webcast. This is Glenn Klein Online. This is night number one of the start of summer 2011 pledge drive. We're asking you guys to participate in any way you can, in a one-time gift, as Bob Hines did. What we're looking for over the next 21 days, I mean, it's absolutely absurd what we're asking for, but we're asking for it nonetheless. We're asking for $600 in one-time, or rather in monthly, would they be new monthly gifts or increased monthly pledges, $7,200 over the next year. So how you do this, you decide, I'm going to give up two cups of coffee a month. $10. Two cups of coffee at Starbucks at $10 a pop. And that's it. That would get you to over $100 in giving over the course of the next 12 months. If you do that, or when you do that, then you will receive free and postage paid. The single CD from the conference that Michael did in Fredericton, New Brunswick with Tom and Linda Wilby. And if you give $200 or more, whether it be in a one-time gift or monthly pledge, you'll receive the entire series on the imputation of God. And all you do is you go to GospelRevolution.com, click on donations, do your best, and then just email us at webcast@GospelRevolution.com. That's webcast@GospelRevolution.com. Let us know what you did and include your shipping address so we can get that to Jeff and get out your thank you gifts. That's it. We're trying to raise $7,200 in monthly pledges over the next 12 months. You can also call the office and talk to Jeff at 352-569-4889. 352-569-4889. He's available right now for those of you, and we know, which is most of you that are listening on the archives, you can call him during the course of business at 352-56-4889. So we had the one-time gift from Bob Hines, which we're very grateful for, but we're at $105, we're happy to report. That would put us over a sixth of the way there here on the first webcast of the Start of Summer Pledge Drive. $105 in new monthly pledges from, drumroll please, it's my favorite part, Michael.
Yeah.
Jerry and Susan Berman from beautiful Longwood, Florida. Pastor Ted Winsett from Decatur, Alabama. Pastor Pat awesome. Winsett from Decatur, Alabama.
How about that?
Leah Dyke from Kelowna, British Columbia. Jackie Bernard, our poet laureate from Manchester, Tennessee. Alvin Cooper from Cape Coral, Florida. Florida representing big time. Mac and Rosa Walker from West Monroe, Louisiana. Gene Giglio from Opelika, Alabama. Am I pronouncing that right?
Opelika, you got it right.
Our sweet sister, Billy Thompson from Wachuca City, Arizona. Cliff and Kate Griffin from Gainesville, Georgia. Billy and Gene Schultz from Pollock Pines, California. Jerry Ryan from right here in Tampa, Florida. And the king of comedy of the Gospel Revolution, Richard Mull, increasing his monthly pledge by $25 from Garden Grove, California, totaling $105 on our way to $600. So get in it, folks.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's so appreciated. And we're going to repeat how you do this many times during the course of the next 21 days. But you need to get involved. And if you are benefiting, and if you want other folks to benefit by the message of the gospel, we are asking for your support. The money is going towards exactly what you're hearing right now. It's going towards sharing this message worldwide, Michael. And we are absolutely convinced that this is the pivotal message. This is the moment for the gospel to be shared in a way that, frankly, folks, it has never been shared before. And, Michael, I'm having the privilege of editing your book called One, The Gospel According to Mike, A Christianity-Free Gospel. And we were talking earlier about the children of God, or being children of God, and I just got through the chapter on your experience with the children of God as you were part of this group right here in Clearwater Beach. You talk about a name and a moniker for a group that so aptly describes what they were. You guys were immature people trying to figure it out. And what, I mean, the story is in the book, folks. You're going to obviously enjoy reading that. But, Michael, that was the height and the epitome of immaturity.
Yes, absolutely. We were completely, everything was controlled about life. Which, the thing of it is, see, at the time, that felt good to me because my life was out of control mentally and emotionally. But, see, that's the role that Christianity comes in different forms, is it comes and tries to bring control rather than freedom. You don't need more control when it's the influence of that particular doctrine that has caused you mental and emotional instability. And with the children of God, we were in complete submission to authority. We did exactly what we were told. We did exactly what we were told when we were told to do it. And we put in the book, I was talking about the garbage ministry. Actually, it was called the garbage ministry, trash ministry. Everything was called ministry. So I was on trash ministry, and that's the way that I got out of there. Actually, I escaped. Because you could not get out of there at all. I mean, goodness gracious. When I mentioned that I wanted to leave, and for reasons that that I tell about in the book, I was told how that two people that left the group were found dead in an elevator. Another person was killed in a car wreck. I was assured that if I left that group, I was leaving all protection of God behind, and I was going to be dead for leaving the group. So, you talk about children.
Well, they used the biblical standard of going out two by two, so they would never let you go anywhere.
I couldn't be by myself.
Except in the garbage ministry.
The garbage ministry, you could take the trash out by yourself, and that is how I escaped. I literally escaped from that group. But yet, you see, you've got to understand, though, I found great solace in being there because I was accepted. I was accepted. You see, I realize this is an extreme, but that's the same reason people are in church. I was accepted here. My goodness, the camaraderie, the community, the structure was unbelievable. But there is nobody on this planet in Christianity that would say that the children of God was anything less than a cult. And there were things going on behind the scenes I didn't know about that are in books around the world now about this group. And there's been documentaries on, and I mean, I sit back and I watch it today. The documentaries about the children of God and David Brant Berg, Moses, that we called him, and the cultish activity of this group. And it's mind-boggling to realize I was a part of the group. But I didn't know a lot of the things that were going on behind the scenes, as I said. But it was total bondage. When you become a son, your decisions are made by you, not your father. When you become a son, your provision comes through you, not your father. When you become a son, your direction in life comes from your own heart, not from your father. It's a part of being free. It's a responsibility that comes with being free. And we are still acting like children, even in our prayer life and this constant thinking that we're going to turn. Here's the contradiction in Christianity. They will tell you, yes, thank God, we are the sons of God. Kenneth Copeland will say it all day long. But they relate to God as a child.
Exactly.
Well, I'm going to ask the Lord this. I'm going to ask the Lord that. I'm going to pray for this, pray for that. We're dependent on the Lord. The Lord's going to do this. The Lord's going to do that. Lord's going to do this. What father... That is a dysfunctional relationship between a father and his son. For the son to constantly be turning to the father for everything that they need. It's time to grow up. I don't know what this grow up theme is about this that's kind of sprung on us here. But I know I was kind of running on that last week and probably the week before too about it's time to grow up. See, we're already sons and we need to grow up mentally and emotionally and accept that. And accept the power, and people say, oh, well, you're stripping away my confidence in God. No, it's the other way around. When you think you're getting your prayers answered and God's doing things for you, number one, you know it ain't happening. It's not happening. And in the long term, and actually in the short term, it's stripping your confidence in God. We need to have confidence in God based on what he did, not based on what we think he ought to do. Once we establish confidence about the cross, about the redemptive work of the cross, once we establish that, then that's where that the strength and the power to live this life, to make your own decisions, to stand up, face the reality of who and what you are, take responsibility, and begin to press forward in life to accomplish the goals and dreams that you have. It is not God's job to fulfill your dreams. It is not God's job to fulfill your goals. It is our job to do it. It is our job to help each other fulfill those goals and to reach those goals and to encourage one another. You see, we have dismissed our responsibility to each other and to ourselves by accepting Christianity's version of God being involved in our daily life. How many times have I grown sick of that statement? Well, Mike, is God involved in our daily lives? God is involved in our daily lives just like you're involved in your son's daily life out in California. You are part of him. You're father and son. You are one.
Right.
But you're not there making decisions for him. You're not there deciding for him.
Exactly.
He's not calling you up saying, Pop, you know, what, should I go to this interview today? Or should I do this today? Or
nope.
Should I do that today?
No. Nope.
He is a son now.
You know, what I was going to say was that not only are we immature by thinking that we're still children, but there are parents across the globe that are immature parents that are still trying to dominate their children. They're grown children. Folks, let me tell you something. God is a mature parent. It was for freedom that he set you free. And he is not dominating you. He does not desire for you to inquire of what you should do. He's saying, what do you want to do? It was for freedom I set you free.
Yeah.
Oh, what you talking about an empowering message.
Oh, yeah.
The gospel will release you. We had that call from Doug in Little Rock a few weeks ago. And he talked about how he was so paralyzed in Christianity, Michael. He couldn't even drive somewhere. And now, if through the gospel, he's an engineer. He's fulfilling his dream. He's going for it. Why? Because he knows he's free to do as is in his heart.
Freed and empowered to do.
Yes.
And, you know, I have a, there's a friend I haven't been in contact with for years. They kind of gave me the left foot of fellowship when they found out that I was openly admitting I was gay, and they're in the Word of Faith doctrine, and they didn't want to let it go. But one of the biggest reasons she did not want to let it go, now she's in her 70s now, and her son, and we were going through this 20 years ago, 25 years ago, and she was still, her son was grown, but every time he got in trouble, she bailed him out. Every time he needed her, he called Mama. And Mama got him out of trouble. Mama bailed him out of jail. Mama went to his aid every time. Now, let me tell you what's happening to this day. He is 45 years old now.
Yeah.
He is still threatening to kill her.
Yeah.
And living in her house.
Yeah.
And she provides everything for him. He's a cripple. He's an absolute mental and emotional cripple. He threatens to kill her all the time. And she provides everything for him.
Yeah.
Now, that's the relationship. That is that combative relationship people have with God. I mean, they're angry at God all the time. The only reason you could be possibly angry with God is because you don't understand the gospel. There is no room to be angry with God. God's no longer angry with us. But let me tell you something. This came to my heart about 20 years ago. I got really, really ticked off with God. I was ticked off with God. And I let him know, I am ticked off with you. And I said a few choice words, too. And just in my heart, this is what came back. If you're still angry with me, then you do not understand the truth. It blew me away. The only way I could be angry with God is if I didn't understand the truth. And let me tell you something. I can tell you to this very day, very directly, if you're experiencing any anger toward God at all, any bitterness, resentment, any feeling like that toward God at all, you are bound by religion. And we need the gospel to set our hearts free. The gospel not only delivered us from God's anger and wrath toward us,
yes.
The gospel delivers you from anger and wrath toward God.
And I would say it even this way, just to dial it down a notch, if you are disappointed with God at all, you do not understand the gospel.
Absolutely. Even a disappointment. You feel that somehow God didn't meet your need, left you out. See, that is a child's mentality. We must develop, we are sons, and we must let the gospel develop the mentality of a son. I don't even have to tell you, you need to develop the mentality of a son. I wouldn't even know how to tell you to develop that. But I can tell you that the same way that the gospel reaches in and plucks out and cleanses the heart and mind from the guilt that we have had in the past and from judgment that we have for others and ourselves, the gospel also reaches in and begins to mature the mind and the soul and the heart, begins to mature that area of us to match up with the reality of who we already are. You're not trying to become sons. And Kenneth Hagin was dead wrong. And now he's just dead. But Kenneth Hagin was dead wrong when he said that when you're born again, the spirit man is a little bitty baby and you got to grow it up. There is nothing that would affirm or confirm his 50-year teaching. Yes, he taught on for 50 years, never changed his mind. And these guys revel in the fact they've never changed their mind. I don't know how you say you're a wise person and never change your mind. Because the thing that is indicative of a mature person or a wise person is that they change their mind.
Right.
And they can say, hey, I was wrong. I said that wrong. I did that wrong. I taught that wrong. I used to think this, now I think that. So this whole issue of holding God hostage to our emotions, is a lack of maturity into the mindset of who we are. If you are holding God hostage to a negative feeling or a negative emotion, we just simply need to grow up.
Well, you know, it's not just holding God responsible. It's holding God accountable for not just what's going on in our lives, but what's going on in the world.
Oh, absolutely.
And, folks, if you want to know how to get to a place where you are not disappointed, where you're not angry with God, where you do not see him as accountable, don't do anything. Don't think that this is something to attain to achieve a higher level of consciousness. All this is being consistently and regularly exposed to the gospel of Yeshua, the Messiah. That's it. That's all you have to do. What do you do? You read the scriptures. You talk about it. You listen to the webcast. You get CDs from Michael. There's very little pure gospel out there, because eventually when you listen to these so-called grace teachers, eventually they're going to talk about reliance on God's power, reliance on God's moving in your life, on answer to prayer, prayer for healing, prayer for this, prayer for that. It's all been fulfilled in Christ. It's not that hard to understand or explain. How much easier is it to explain, Michael? This was fulfilled. God's way of dealing with humanity shifted from an Old Testament mode and module to a New Testament way at the cross. It all changed. The end of the world happened. The end of the age, the aeon, happened over 2,000 years ago. It's not that hard to understand.
It all switched from children to sons. These scriptural comparisons must remain intact. When we start falsely comparing this with that, see, when we allow Christianity or any other religion or even our own mind to take these things out of context, just like saying, one of the main things that Christianity does, it says, oh, we are new creation now. Well, they're comparing what you were before you went through a believing in Jesus session to after you believing in Jesus session. That is not when the new creation was substantiated and manifested. The new creation was manifested when Jesus rose from the dead. There is no new creation being made. There is no new heaven. There is no new earth. The new heaven, the new earth, the kingdom of God, the establishment of the new creation was all done 2,000 years ago. We're not looking for this to happen. We're trying to help people catch up with what did happen. And once we can come to grips with this reality, and we come to grips with this reality by accepting the scriptural comparisons as given. Stop thinking it's about you and about me. There's nothing about you in the Bible. There's nothing about you in the scriptures. It is not about you. It is about Jesus. And the moment we insert ourselves into this story or this picture, the degree that you insert yourself into the story, into the picture, is the degree of bondage you're going to walk in.
Exactly. This is Glenn Klein online. That's Michael Williams. It's Gospel Revolution Wednesday night. Do we still have Jan with us? We do. You might have heard the phones ringing. Things have been really hopping in the studio here. We're going to forego the top of the hour break because we've got two callers online. We want to go to Jan in beautiful Madison, Wisconsin. Jan!
Hello, how are you?
Oh, we're doing wonderful. What a pleasure to hear from you again. How are you?
Oh, good, good. Yeah, it's been a month or so. When I was just listening tonight, do you want me to go ahead and start talking or stop?
Yeah. No. Go talk, but you got to turn your computer down there in the background a little bit.
Okay, let me just shut this thing down. Sorry.
No, that's all right. We're on a little bit of a delay. When you folks call, we love to hear from you, but just know that the computer, that's a beautiful thing.
Is that better? Is that off?
I can still hear it.
Okay. How about that?
All right, go ahead, Jan. This is Jan Heller.
Am I good?
Yeah, you're good to go.
Am I good to go? Okay. Just a couple of things that were running through my head, and especially this week, too, when Mike was talking about, you know, being angry with God. Mine wasn't such an experience of being angry with God growing up. Mine was a fear. I lived in total fear of God. And yet I had such love and hunger of wanting to know this God. But all through church, I remember from little, if I didn't say the Our Father prayer before I went to bed, or the other one that we used to all say, now you lay me down to sleep, you know, that one. I felt, even all through my adult life and up until, you know, some years back, that if I didn't say that every night or the Our Father prayer, that God would be, I guess I would say, I thought he'd be upset, but I would worry more than anything, because that's what happens to me. I get into fear. And so the last few months since I've been, you know, connected with you guys in the ministry and listening, I am so excited. Just every day, just more things just keep being unfolded, or I don't know, I start shaking because I get so excited of what God has been revealing and how the fear is just leaving. And I was talking to Jeff, and it was kind of humorous, I thought, but it was serious, it was humorous. And I gave him a call one day, and I go, guess what? I know the best relief for getting off of Zoloft. Now, some people might not think this is funny, but if you know what Zoloft is for anti-anxiety and all those things that people get on.
Right.
And I had extreme anxiety, and I was on this, and I was on that, and, you know, so they had me on Zoloft, and I said, something clicked, and for 2 months now, almost 2 months, since I've gotten this down into my heart more and more, I'm not on Zoloft. I just realized I wasn't taking it anymore, and I'm so much freer. And I said, I've got the cure for it. It's the revelation of the gospel, you know?
That's a great way to put it, Jan. And Michael, you can relate to that because, of course, you've told the story so many times, but I think it bears repeating, that you were on serious medication for many, many years because of anxiety attacks. And,
exactly.
And you don't experience that like that anymore, do you, Michael?
No, I don't experience it at all. I'm telling you, daily life was hurdles through hell is the only way. Mm-hmm. And until you've had a full blown panic attack, if you had one in your life, it would be a very poignant moment for you. Mm-hmm. There's people that get carted straight off to the hospital thinking that they're having heart attacks and everything else when they have their very first full-blown panic attack.
Mm-hmm. And I've had
it's
that
hard
happen
to
me too. Mm-hmm.
You have that happen. So now here, I had those, Jan. So you know what those are. Now, my average day for panic, those types of panic attacks was about 50 a day.
Oh, my Lord. Wow.
Yeah. Walking through the grocery store, it didn't make any difference where I was. Any place that I was encountering people, I would have massive panic attacks. I learned how to mask them and keep people from knowing. I don't know that that was actually such a good thing because I was ashamed of the panic attacks. I was so ashamed of the panic attacks that I hid it. And, oh, my gosh, I tried every drug I could get my hands on, but nothing really controlled the panic at all. It just didn't do it. But that is all gone for me. It's really funny that somebody should be so grateful to walk through the grocery store. I go through the checkout lane, and it's like, wow, you know, this is a wonderful experience. I get to walk through the checkout lane. I don't have to leave my groceries in the cart and walk around and walk out of the store because I'm suddenly so paralyzed with fear, I can't get through the checkout lane.
You know, I used to hear Michael retell the stories of his panic attacks, and I couldn't relate to it at all. I never had one until about 8 years ago when I went through my divorce, and I experienced paralyzing panic and anxiety. And folks, if you've never experienced that, you can't begin to imagine what we're talking about right now. But I'm thankful for that experience because I couldn't get myself to go and fill my gas tank up. It's simple things like going to the grocery store. And now I'm so thankful for that experience because, number one, I can empathize and relate to folks that are going through that and admit that I experienced that and also have come out on the other side. And the only thing that I can attribute to coming out of that and many other emotional and psychological distress is the gospel. The gospel is the power of God, folks. It is to the saving of the soul. It's to the stability of the heart. And I can't recommend the gospel enough. That's why we do. I mean, this is, we ain't making any money, folks. We're asking for money just to keep the thing going. But the reason that we do this is because we believe in it so much. The gospel is the power of God to your salvation. And salvation is not your relationship with God. As Jan said, the gospel is the revelation of the relationship that you already have with God.
Yes. Right. Right. And that's
Jan, this is wonderful
news. That's what's happened.
Well, Jan,
wonderful news.
We're so thankful to hear from you, and I know you want to make a monthly pledge of $20 a month, which is fantastic. And Jan's actually in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. I've actually been to Mount Horeb, and it's a beautiful place.
Yep, not too far out of Madison, your hometown, or some, I think you said, or you've been up in this area.
Well, so. I graduated from the UW there, so.
Oh, okay, that's what it was, right.
Love okay. Mad City. Well, stay in touch, all right?
Okay, thank you so much.
Thank you, great to hear from you.
Okay,
there's
love you
Jan Heller,
bye.
Love you too.
Bye-bye.
There's Jan Heller from Madison, Wisconsin, with the $20 monthly pledge. That takes us to $125. Of new or increased monthly giving. And on our way to $600 for these next 21 days, this is webcast number one of three. And as you folks can tell who are listening to this, we've got lots of gospel in and lots of gospel to get to. But before we do, let us go now to the aforementioned Doug Bowman of Little Rock, Arkansas. Doug!
Hello, how are you guys?
Doug, we're getting saved, brother.
Hey, Doug.
Hey, Mike, how you doing? Hey, you guys talking about the gospel tonight?
like
brought up.
Like we do every night.
Like you do every night, I hear you. Hey, I turned my computer on, and I said, oh, it's Wednesday night. I'm going to turn on and see if the webcast is on. I turned it on, I clicked the button, and then you guys started talking, and then I heard my name. I was like, wow, that's weird.
That is weird. I'll give you that.
Oh, but I wasn't listening to you guys. It was some good stuff.
Awesome.
I'm going to call and check in, see how you guys are doing, make sure a few things with you.
Yeah, go for it.
I hear hearing you talk about, you know, what people wondering what God wants them to do and worried about that a lot. And, you know, I told you last time, I did worry about that quite a bit, about what God wanted me to do. But, you know, I guess over the last few years, I've gotten to where, you know, like you were saying, I don't think about that like that anymore, you know. It's more, you know, what do I want to do? You know, what's in my heart to do? You know, that's when I was telling you I started going back to school. And that's really what I wanted to do. I want to teach. And so I started going back to school. And when you think about it, I have a son. He just turned 18 and he just got out of high school. I was thinking about my relationship with him, and you know, if he as a son came to me all the time, kept asking me what I wanted him to do, even if he was grown, if he came asking me that all the time, I would say, son, grow up.
Grow
you
up.
Know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's what we were talking about tonight. And you know, I alluded to your story, Doug, earlier on, and we've talked about you on previous webcasts in between your calls here, because relate to the folks how paralyzed you were in Christianity and what happened to you.
Well, I think some of that had to do with some stuff that that I went through with my relationship with my own father early on. But when I got into Christianity, I think I started relating to God as I did my father.
Right.
My
and by the way, that is the kind of guilt and condemnation that are put on fathers, Michael, that your children will only view God the way they view you, and therefore you need to represent God in their lives or they're going to get it messed up. You talk about a paralysis and a stifling perspective for fathers out there. You're supposed to be God to your kids, folks. No, you're not. No, you're not.
No, you're not. And you're right. And I was easily pulled into that brand of Christianity because it was more of I got to do this to get, you know, to get, to feel like I'm getting accepted by God. So, you know, and then when I made mistakes, God was up there beating me over the head. No, you can't make a mistake, which led to, you know, the paralyzation of, you know, like I said last time, a lot of times, you know, we would go on vacations and, you know, 50 miles out of town, I would be paralyzed because I felt like something was going to happen because maybe, you know, we were going to get out somewhere in the middle of the country or in a city, and I'm not able to protect my family, or something happens back home, or I shouldn't have gone there. And, you know, even moving across town, I would get sick at my stomach and, you know, feel like I had the flu. And it was just, and, you know, when I look back at it now, it was just paralyzing fear that I was making a mistake, and that, you know, that it kind of went to my value as a person. You know, any mistake I made, really said that I am a mistake, I guess you might say, you know. I realized that God said it was okay to make a mistake, you know. I make them all the time. That didn't bother me.
Well, you know, where you logged on to, where you heard your name mentioned, we went into great detail about how we don't really make mistakes anymore. And you need to go back and listen to the archive, Doug, because you will benefit tremendously. But,
well, maybe in other people's eyes I make mistakes.
No, right.
Maybe in my own eyes, I guess.
There you go.
Exactly right. Well, you want to make an additional, I know you're already a giver, Doug, but you want to make an additional gift on this pledge drive?
Yeah, I told him I was going to up my ante a little bit. Hey, a couple other things. I remember when I was going through that, I always looked at that scripture, when Jesus said, come to me all year weary and heavy laden, I'll give you rest.
Right.
You know, and I kept going, God, you know, why can't I find that rest? What does that mean? I cannot find it. And I would read it and read it over and pray, you know, pray over it and pray over it until I finally realized after, you know, I think, I became free of all that. And then I start looking back at the Bible and reading these things. He was talking to the people who needed rest.
Oh,
he was
good.
Talking to the Pharisees and the folks that thought you had to perform for God.
They were under the law. The people that Jesus was speaking to before the cross were all under the law. And Michael, as you've said so many times and so eloquently, is that Joshua should have been the last teacher of the law, but he has not been.
Well, he was actually the only real teacher of the law. He was the first and should have been the last. He was the ever since the law was given, there was no accurate teacher of the law until Jesus came. Once Jesus taught it, it should have been left there until Jesus fulfilled it, because the thing Jesus did immediately after teaching all of the law in its context was go and fulfill the law. So, yes, he was, first off, he was the first true teacher of the law, and he should have been the last teacher of the law. The true teacher of the law, he was the first and the last true teacher of the law. Paul said there's a lot of people going around teaching the law, and they don't know what they're saying, and no, they don't know what they're affirming. Paul tried to bring out, when you trust in the law, here's what you're affirming. This is what you're affirming. If you're going back under the law, this is what you're affirming. He did it in Hebrews chapter 12. It's because people don't read Paul in context. One of the things Paul was telling the Hebrews, by going back under the law, this is what you're affirming, is that you're still under chastening and scourging as a child. If you're under the law, you're a child. If you're under the law, you are affirming that you're still being chastened and scourged by the Lord.
Exactly.
And that just ain't true, is the conclusion that he comes to in chapter 12. Yet, because of a lack of understanding of anything about the gospel, I'm sorry, Christianity is just out in left field when it comes to the gospel. They carry the name of Jesus and the stories. No conclusions about the gospel that I know of at all, in Christianity. Zero. I can't find a place they're right. About the conclusions about the work of the cross. So Paul was trying to help them understand that when you do attempt to teach the law, now remember, ever since Jesus, there's been attempters to teach the law. Nobody has taught the law except Jesus. The most powerful thing you'll ever learn about the law is nobody ever taught it but Jesus. Nobody ever taught it accurately but Jesus. Nobody ever taught the truth that was contained in the law except Jesus.
Why
was the first and the last.
Why is that, Michael?
Because Jesus left the law completely intact. Jesus condemned everybody. Jesus himself didn't, but he let the law condemn everybody. Everybody that came to Jesus, one of the things that I learned from you, Glenn, was that the number one reason, because you see the pattern, this happened every time. Every time Jesus gathered a group around because he was performing miracles, then he'd turn around and say, well, you got to eat my flesh and drink my blood, or you have no part in the kingdom of God. So and he would start teaching the harsh realities,
right?
The harsh realities of self-righteousness.
He would say things like, folks, he would say, remember, he would walk on water. He would turn water into wine. He would raise the dead. He would heal lepers. And then he would say, if your right hand offends you, cut it off.
Yeah.
You don't want to know what you have to do to inherit eternal life? You have got to give everything away that you have to the poor. You got to pluck out your eye. And then, by the way, the most dramatic, condemning thing that he said was you must believe. You've got to believe. No one will inherit the kingdom of God unless they believe. And if you deny me before men, I will deny you before the Father. You know what happened, Doug? The Bible says it over and over. They all left him. And he even turned to the disciples. And they said, he said, you guys going to go too? And they said, where are we going to go? You've got the very words of life.
Yeah, they might have said that, you know, at times in the New Testament, they might have said, you know, I believe or he believed. But it was, to me, it's like, it's not to the depth he's talking about.
No, well, we know that he warned them about denying, and we know that he specifically told Peter that he would deny him three times before the cock crowed. Peter still denied him, and then when Yeshua shows up in his resurrected state, of course, Peter is freaked out. And what does Yeshua say to him? He says, I hold no transgression against you. Thomas didn't just not believe, he was defiant in his unbelief. He said, I will not believe. And Jesus walks through the wall, and he doesn't say, Thomas, you're gone. He says, you want to see the scars? Check it out. And what was Thomas's response? The response, when Yeshua is revealed to every human heart, and the soul responds the exact same way that Thomas and that Paul on the road to Damascus, who was Saul at the time, responds. They hit the deck and they say, my Lord and my God. That is the point of true conversion. When you know that you are not your belief, your faith, your prayer, your walking down an aisle doesn't do squat, but you are convinced that Yeshua is Lord and Savior, and we know when that happens, your soul is saved. You're already redeemed, but then you know that you have been saved. It's a beautiful thing.
That's some good preaching there, brother.
Good preaching, Roberts. Hey, Doug, thanks a lot for calling, bro. We got more show.
All right. Thanks, Doug.
All right, well, y'all have a good night.
We're going to be talking about you some more, so log on some more, okay?
We talk about you. You better find out what it is.
All right, there's Doug Bowman.
I knew my ears were itching a little bit.
we're glad you called. Thanks for contributing, too.
All right, bye.
All right, there's Doug Bowman from Little Rock. Let us go a little further south, the beautiful, sweet home, Alabama, to the ambassador of the Gospel Revolution, Pastor Ted Winsett.
Good evening.
How are you?
Good evening.
Ted.
How's everyone?
We're doing wonderful.
Good, Ted. How are you?
Oh, I'm just fine.
Ted, thank you so much, and thank Pat for being a part of this thing.
How sweet.
And contributing.
Oh, yeah. We're glad to do it. At our age, we're glad we can do something. But I tell you what, I have enjoyed the last two callers tremendously. Miss Jan, and I didn't catch the name of the last caller.
That's Doug from Little Rock.
Yeah. Who?
Doug.
Okay.
Doug. D-O-U-G. Doug.
Okay. Man, that was awesome. I'd love to have that on a CD or something with their permission to play it to about 50 people that I counsel with. That is
awesome. You go right ahead.
Oh, man, I would love it. I mean, I'm telling you, been there, done that, you know, what do you say, got the T-shirt. But anyway, the thing about the sonship, I thought that was really neat, too. I'm just studying this very week, as a matter of fact. There's two Greek words, and I guess my Greek is as good as anyone's. Technon means a child, up to like a toddler.
Yeah.
But then you have huios, which is sonship, which I think, just me, that's where we get the bar mitzvahs. You know, the Jewish boys, when they turn 13, they get a big party. And the father gives them gifts and all this. And if I understand it correctly, from that day on, the father is not responsible for the son's sins against God. He's responsible for himself. So the father is rejoicing. But I think also, just came to my mind, that that's probably where our Christianity religion got the age of accountability.
Yes, that's correct.
You know, in 12, 13, something like that. But I just thought that was very interesting about a child, a toddler, sonships, and all this. Like when Herod was going to kill all the babies 2 years old or younger, there's two words there. When the Magi finally came to Jesus, there's a different word for baby to when they found the child. That means toddler. So he could have been 2 or 3 years old, we know. But anyway, I just want to tell you that was very interesting. Appreciated the last two calls very, very much. It really hit home, and we can relate to it. And, fellas, you're doing good. So keep it up.
Well, that was worth listening to. Thank you so much.
And my wife said tell you hello, and she loves you.
We love Pat, too.
Oh, we love her, too.
And when are you going to have Michael come to Decatur?
Well, yeah, mister, I'll tell you what's the truth. If I don't get fired in the next couple of weeks, it's in the works. No, they can't fire me. They didn't hire me. But anyway, we got some things going, and things are looking up, and we have talked about it, and we're working on it.
All right.
Well, you know we're with you whether I'm there or not.
Hey, Michael can't come, Glenn, unless you come.
All right.
You go.
I love Alabama, so come on.
I hear you, brother. Okay, fellas. Well, have a good evening.
And we
love you, Ted.
Thanks, Ted.
I love you too, fellas.
All right, and thanks again for contributing.
Yes, sir.
That's Ted Winsett, the ambassador of the Gospel Revolution. We've actually had some new additions to the titles of the Gospel Revolution. All you got to do is go to gospelrevolution.com, and at the bottom of the homepage, you'll see all the titles that have been added and are, and we want your title to contribute. And we have a lot of fun with it, and we are taking all titles. We had, can't remember his last name, but it's Daniel, and he wanted to be, Michael, he requested that his title would be God's Favorite.
Absolutely.
And we were all over that, because Daniel understands the gospel, and God does have a favorite, and there's such a thing as a tie for first, and we're all in that category. Hallelujah to you. Speaking of the Gospel Revolution website, the man that manages all the administrative efforts is online with us from Lake Ponasofsky. Did I say it right?
Almost.
Oh, close.
Jeff Lake Ponasofsky. There I decided.
There you go.
Ponasofsky.
Got
I got one S there. Ponasofsky. Jeff Roberts. Jeff Rowe!
Hey, guys. How's it going?
We're having fun.
Jeff.
Yeah, you are. Awesome calls tonight, and you know what? This sounds like a growing up webcast, and it's really interesting because I've spoken to two people today. Well, I've spoken to 2,000 people today, probably, but I've spoken to two people today, and it was really odd because I spoke to one, and then the other called immediately after that, And the first one was a guy who called the office back in January, and he was telling me how he's finally getting a handle on this message, and he's experiencing freedom. But he was telling me about his wife who goes to church, and he doesn't like going to church anymore, and he was really frustrated. He felt like his marriage was going to have to end because she was staying in the church, and she insisted that, you know, you still have to believe to be saved and all this other stuff. And he said it was really wrecking, he felt like it was wrecking the marriage. And I was like, well, you know, I'm not a counselor, I am not paid to counsel, But you've got this gospel, right? And the first thing, the last thing you do is tell the person they need to grow up. But that's actually the very issue at hand. And the problem is he had been in religion all his life, and I have determined that people involved in religion don't grow up.
Exactly,
it hampers
right.
us from growing up. People not involved in religion seem to mature much better, don't they?
I agree with you totally.
Yeah, religion is like puts binders on you, like the Chinese do on their feet and all that other stuff. It restricts growth, and so I was like, well, you're experiencing this freedom, and you realize that the law was fulfilled, so you realize that Jesus fulfilled all requirements, right? And he's like, yeah. And he said, so all those requirements, you no longer have any expectations on yourself to fulfill those requirements, right? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, and I'm like, okay, but you want her to believe what you believe now, right? He's like, yeah. I said, so why are you putting requirements on her when you have no requirements on you? And again, I'm not counseling you because I'm not a counselor and I'm not paid to. And he's like, you got a point. I said, you know what? I have a feeling that if you apply the freedom that you've given yourself to your wife, I think you'll notice a difference. Now, I'm not saying this is going to save your marriage or nothing. And he called me today, and he said their relationship has totally changed. They communicate now for the first time in their lives. It's much better. She came to him a month later and said, you know what, you don't have to go to church with me if you don't want to. I know you believe differently. And then she came to him last week and said, you know what, I haven't tithed in the past few weeks because somehow I just know that I don't have to. He said their relationship is better than it ever was before. And I'm like, oh, well, that's great. He said, Jeff, what you told me worked. I said, I didn't counsel you. We were just talking about the gospel. I did not counsel you. And then a guy called me, and he's been listening to the webcast for a month. He's very new to the gospel. Called me right after that, and he said, but you know what? My wife, she's not coming along with this thing. And I was like, oh, my God, I just talked to her. I said, you know what? I tell you what. I told somebody else this. I'll tell you. And I explained him the whole thing, and it's like, you know what? If you don't have any expectations on yourself anymore, you realize all the requirements are fulfilled in Jesus. It's all about Jesus. It was always about Jesus. If you can do that with yourself, then extend that grace to your wife. And I explained how it worked for the other guy. He thanked me profusely. He said, you know what? You just opened my mind to all kinds of things. But you know what? Here's the deal. It's a Christianity-free gospel. If we can get that religion that hampered us from growing up and becoming mature sons of God, and if we can extend that grace to the people in our lives, then you've got a real movement going.
No doubt. Michael, one of the things, well, the thing that Jesus described as hypocrisy was he didn't criticize people for saying one thing and doing another. He criticized and called people hypocrites for judging people guilty of the very things they were guilty of.
Right.
That's the dangerous thing about religion, is that religion strikes out at the very thing, and we know this for a fact, that when you hear preachers preaching against certain lifestyle choices and certain decisions that people make strongly, it's because that's what they are facing in their lives, and that is hypocrisy. That's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah, I think the framework of this that Jeff is sharing with us is all between the issue of guilt and judgment. Everyone who's come into understanding the gospel, they acknowledge the easy thing, the first thing to go is guilt. The last thing to go is judgment. So this is not an unusual pattern to see, is that it's easy for us to accept this stake of freedom that we have been established in. But we are beginning to understand the freedom that we have. But because judgment still exists, we're not as likely to extend the same freedom to others that we ourselves are experiencing. So these two things really fall into that very same thing that we started really with the webcast, is guilt and judgment. And it's easier to allow guilt to leave than it is to allow judgment to leave, because when you start allowing judgment to leave your heart, you are losing all control. Or
absolutely.
Or control you thought you had over somebody else.
Right, that's exactly right.
I hate to sound like a used car salesman, but there is a series that comes to mind that explains this brilliantly for anybody who's dealing with anything like expectations on themselves or others or anything, and it's called Don't Offend the Grace of God. I hate to make the plug, but I've got to.
Mm-hmm.
And you can download it or you can order it from me, either way. But
Jeffro, you don't really hate to make the plug. You love to make the plug.
I just don't want to sound like a used car salesman.
No, you don't.
Okay,
no, this is
pride here.
This is definitely not a used car, folks. Call Jeff for this or anything else, and to make the pledge at 352-569-4889. Jeffro, we're up against the clock. We love you. Thanks for everything. All right, buddy.
Talk to you later.
Off
Bye.
You go.
Love you, Jeff.
All right, there goes Jeff Robertson, the administrator of the Gospel Revolution. Yeah, used car sales. No, this is fresh bread. Fresh bread. And Pastor Ted called back and said, Daniel cannot use God's Favorite as his title because Pastor Ted's wife, Pat, has been using that for 20 years.
A shared title.
Well, that's, you know, there's shared titles, just like there's a tie for first place. Well, folks, listen, we promised that we were going to get to this clip, and it's only about 4 minutes. This is maybe a perfect or the perfect way to wrap up the Gospel Revolution Start of Summer Pledge Drive 2011. This is a report that just came to our attention from Linda Wilby that was on Inside Edition with Deborah Norville reporting, and it's a television report, so you're going to have to listen a little bit closely, but this is a television report post May 21st, so the rapture didn't happen, and they tied that into a report on how far from thinking that the end of the world is going to come at any moment, that many ministers of Christianity, preachers of Christianity, are living like rock stars. They're living high on the hog. People like Kenneth Copeland and Paula White and Creflo Dollar, and they talk about them, Joyce Meyer. You'll enjoy this, and this will madden you to no end, and it should. And we'll talk about it on the other side. This is Inside Edition, Deborah Norville.
Contrary to that highly publicized prediction, the world did not end over the weekend, which means another.
All right, we'll get to that. I think we had it muted. Let's take two.
Contrary to that highly publicized prediction, the world did not end over the weekend, which means a number of preachers who live like rock stars will get to continue living the good life. How good? Here's Lisa Guerrero and the I Squad with a look at some who've been preaching prosperity who are living large.
Fresh wind, fresh.
They are some of the most popular TV preachers in the country.
We're family here.
They urge the faithful followers to donate generously, and in return, the Lord will bring them prosperity.
I'm not going to be going to heaven and be broke when I get there.
And there's no denying some people have prospered handsomely.
Wow!
The pastors themselves, they live like rock stars with huge mansions, private jets, and fancy cars. Their lifestyles are so lavish, six of them have been investigated by the U.S. Senate, like Paula White, who lives in multi-million dollar homes in New York City and Tampa, Florida. And Creflo Dollar, he gets around in style, flying in private jets to preach around the country. He owns this mansion in an exclusive Atlanta suburb.
Mr. Dollar, how do you...
Not one of them would agree to an interview about their opulent lifestyle.
How do you justify your million-dollar mansions and your jets to all of your donors, sir?
Oh, yeah.
But when it comes to opulence, few religious leaders compare to Kenneth Copeland.
You and I are supposed to always have.
To show you his house, we rented this helicopter so you can see his 18,000-square-foot mansion valued at over $6 million.
He lives in this home outside Fort Worth, Texas. It has beautiful water views and comes complete with a boathouse. But that's not all. Copeland is an avid pilot, and here's his pride and joy, a $20 million Cessna Citation jet. It's the fastest private jet money can buy. He said he needed it to better serve the Lord, and proudly did a flyby for his followers after the church bought it.
Shout amen!
But it's not just one plane. We found a fleet of planes registered to the church, and you won't catch him waiting in line at the airport, because he's got his own, the Kenneth Copeland Airport, located right next to his mansion.
I think Copeland is unbelievably greedy.
Ole Anthony heads the Trinity Foundation, a religious watchdog group that worked closely with the Senate committee investigating Copeland and other TV preachers.
Televangelism alone is at least a $2.5 to $3 billion industry. Untaxed, unregulated.
That's right. By law, religious groups like Copeland's are exempt from federal taxes, and they don't have to report how they spend their money to anyone.
Amen.
Copeland's church takes in tens of millions a year through donations and selling books and DVDs to his donors.
She sent them a lot of money, a whole lot of money.
When Christy Parker's mother died of cancer, she found diaries that showed her mother sent Copeland most of her life savings, hoping her faith and donations would cure her of her terminal disease.
What do you think of Kenneth Copeland's lifestyle?
TV doesn't do it justice. Their office furniture is probably worth more than most people's houses. It makes you sick.
Oh my.
Copeland refused our request for an interview, so we caught up with him at an event in North Carolina.
Why you're living such a lifestyle of luxury off of church donations?
Ma'am, I don't think we have time for this.
Thank you.
Why won't you answer our questions?
A hotel employee tried to prevent us from taping.
Wait. Hold on.
Come here.
It's a simple question, sir.
Yes, and I'm going to give you a simple answer.
Thank you.
My lifestyle follows the scripture. We give, we believe, we're open.
You have a fleet of private jets. Why is that necessary? You're a minister. How many private jets do you have?
Right after that, he walked away.
Although Copeland says he cooperated with the Senate investigation, the committee disagreed, saying only two television preachers did, Joyce Meyer and Benny Hinn. And the committee recommended that the IRS investigate further.
Michael, does Kenneth Copeland live his life scripturally?
There is not a, doubt in my mind that it is not lived scripturally. other than the fact that we have been set free, we live scripturally based on the fact that we've all been made righteous and holy and perfect. But to relate Kenneth Copeland or anybody's lifestyle as a scriptural lifestyle, nobody has a scriptural marriage. Nobody's got a scriptural divorce. Nobody has scriptural money. Nobody has scriptural disease. Nobody has scriptural health. Nobody has a scriptural job. There's nothing scriptural about it. They don't even know what the scriptures are. And his statement that his life is a scriptural life, it's just ignorance upon ignorance.
And did you hear what he said at the end there? I don't know if you were able to catch it. But when the reporter asked him, how many planes do you have? And he said, none of your business. That's none of the people, including the poor woman's mother, who gave her life savings to him. It's none of the public's business. Where do they get that arrogance from?
Well, it's called self-righteousness, and when you start thinking that your faith can do anything, that's what it does. And when you tell people your faith can do it, they start doing things for you to make it look like your faith is working, so they can. It's a pyramid scheme is what it is. That's nothing more than a Ponzi scheme of faith. It's a faith Ponzi scheme. And we will say that your faith's working and give you all this money. That'll look like that maybe what we're doing will work too. Nobody's faith is going to work like Kenneth Copeland's because you don't have millions to take up funds from. I believe that Kenneth Copeland's faith is working for him pertaining to money when he no longer takes donations. God doesn't support his ministry, and God doesn't support mine. God doesn't support Kenneth Copeland Ministries, and God does not support Mike Williams Ministries. People support it. It's the reason they support it that we are taking issue with. Everybody that supports Kenneth Copeland Ministries is told that God is going to provide them with the wealth that he has. It hasn't happened to a single one of them. Not a single one of them have the wealth through giving that Kenneth Copeland has through receiving their gifts, and yet they're supposed to get a hundredfold on their giving. People support Kenneth Copeland's ministry. People in bondage support Kenneth Copeland's ministry. People who are in guilt support Kenneth Copeland's ministry. People who are judgmental support Kenneth Copeland's ministry. The Mike Williams ministry is supported by people also. But thank God it is supported by people who want to support the effort of getting the message of freedom out to other people. And that's the difference. This whole issue of God supporting ministry is just craziness. It's absolutely crazy. God is not obligated to provide Mike Williams ministry with money. And he will not provide Mike Williams ministry with money. God is not providing anybody's ministry with money. God is providing nobody with money. These are games. These are mind games played on the religious mind to get people to give to this degree. And we gave up that calling card many years ago when more than 25 years ago I stood up and taught that tithing was not for the new covenant. Let me tell you something. That's when I began to be dismissed from churches around the country. Yeah. They were greatly blessed by some of my teaching on grace. Oh man, Michael, that's great. Great teaching on grace. Oh man, that's wonderful. I went in and told them that this grace frees you from all law, including the tithe, and I got the left foot of fellowship. So
I was on Facebook this morning and talked about, you know, some of my recent experiences locally in business. And I said, if there's any way I can help you, please let me know how. And one of the people that I'm friends with on Facebook, who is in Wisconsin still, who was a member of Believer's Church in Marshfield, at the time, large Word of Faith charismatic church, Facebooked me back and said, Glenn, please send me $1 million. And I said to her, I said, Anita, I said, with all the tithing you've done, you should have had $1 million a long time ago. And she came back to me and said, well, you said, you know, anything you could help. And I said, the key optimal word there, Anita, was how I can help. And I said, for that kind of help, you might need to go to Mark Gunger or people of his ilk. And yeah. She gave me a nice LOL on that. Folks, it don't work, to quote a great man. It don't work. It's just the Kenneth Copelands and the Paula Weiss and the Creflo Dollars benefited. But according to their doctrine and their teaching, everybody should be a multimillionaire because God returns 1,000-fold with faith. And it is just, it is as crazy as anything that you can imagine in Christianity. It's certainly as crazy as Michael's quote from Kenneth Hagin about how your spirit's a little itty bitty baby. It's just, they just made it up. And you're not bound by it anymore. We posted this on the Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution Facebook wall this afternoon, and this actually came in from a new gospel revolutionary, Donna Pratt Ridge, and she says, that crap makes me sick. I came out of the Word of Faith movement, and I'm very familiar with every single minister naming this piece. I actually have friends on my friends list who work for some of these ministers. I just wonder how they would react if I shared this on my wall. I just might do it anyway. LOL. It's not that I oppose ministers having nice things, but when they live like Hollywood movie stars, and you know it's due to the donation of God's, quote, hardworking people, the common man who is struggling just to make ends meet, but sends money anyway out of the belief that he or she will be, quote, blessed, that is what I object to, she says. They preach a very self-serving, distorted gospel, which is why I refuse to watch Christian TV anymore. She says, I just can't take it. We understand where you're coming for, coming from, Donna. And here's the reality, folks. Kenneth Copeland in this piece, and you can go to the Friends page, folks, Facebook, Friends of Mike Williams of the Gospel Revolution. You can see the entire video there. Kenneth Copeland takes off in this $20 million private plane that the church bought from him to the applause of the congregants that are assembled, Michael, there at the airstrip. Could you imagine what we could do with $20 million? And that's just in this plane. And the woman whose mother gave her life savings said that their opulent lifestyle, that their office furniture is probably worth in most people's homes. That is probably accurate. And here we are on the first webcast of the Start of Summer Pledge Drive asking for $600 in new or increased monthly pledges. That's what our goal is. That over the course of 12 months, that registers to $7,200. Why are we asking for that? Because we need it. We're not expecting God to give it. We're not expecting anything that we do to produce it.
We're not praying for it.
We're not praying for it, but we know what our current needs are to do what? To keep this message out every week, to send Michael on the road, to keep Jeff plugging away in Lake Panasoffkee. Within the office, sending out CDs, sending out DVDs, taking phone calls.
Hazel doing the office in Illinois.
Hazel doing the office. This is minuscule. I mean, this is a ant on the buttocks of the world. What we're talking about, and the reason that we have to come this way is because we can't tell you that God is asking this of you. We can't tell you that your treasures are stored up in heaven when you do it. It is not accurate. It is not scripturally accurate. Everything has been fulfilled at the cross. What we're asking you to do is to do something deliberately, to make a choice for yourself, to be part of this thing. And so as we close this first webcast during this 21-day pledge drive, we're asking you to go to gospelrevolution.com. We're asking you to call Jeff at the office, which the number is also at the website. We're asking you to pledge at least $10 a month. That's what we're asking. If you want to make a one-time pledge, we're happy and grateful to receive that. Michael, I don't know how to better say it or how to better demonstrate the difference between what is happening in many segments of Christianity versus what we need at the Gospel Revolution.
Yeah, it's pretty shocking, you know. The folks that hear the gospel, you know, we're still maturing and we're still growing into this responsibility that we have. And
am I still on? All right, Michael got cut off. We're still maturing. Was the last thing that I heard, and that's probably a pretty good place to end up. We are a solid 20 minutes overtime. We take at least 30 minutes extra on the pledge drives because we know we're going to talk a little bit about money. But for those of you, whether you're listening live or on the archive, you know that the vast majority, even in this almost 2 hours now of webcasting, is dedicated towards this good news. that you are righteous and perfect and holy and sinless and not liable to God for anything. It all came to you courtesy of a cross that was erected on a place called Golgotha over 2,000 years ago in the city of Jerusalem. That's good news. Well, let us hear from you this week at webcast@gospelrevolution.com. Just go to the webpage, do your best. Let's continue to get this thing moving forward. And apparently Michael's computer died, and hopefully he didn't. And assuming that that is all true, we will come to you next week with another edition of the Gospel Revolution. We want to thank everybody who called tonight, Jan Heller from Madison, Wisconsin, Doug Bowman from Little Rock, Jeff Robertson from Florida, Pastor Ted Winsett from Alabama. Want to thank Jeff for administering the Gospel Revolution, and for Sean O'Halloran being the producer, engineer, and call screener extraordinaire. Aressa, get my tea and honey ready. I am on my way home. Until next time, this is Glenn Klein Online saying, Shalom, everybody!